Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
I don't know what it is. I am like the rest of the audience. But apparently Sean Morash, who is, I give him a lot of credit. He's got sources. He talks to a lot of people. Finally, it's about to pay off because Sean Morash has something big to tell us about New York sports. So, Sean, my mic is off. The floor is yours.
So a couple days ago, Evan, the great Paul Schwartz puts out a back page story, split ticket. Don't assume Joe Shane and Brian Daboll are tied together. Now, that could do a couple things. It could cause outrage or it could cause antennas to go up. My antennas were up because I'm frustrated, obviously, following this Giant team as we all are. So I've done some poking around. I've done some digging around. And I've now gotten this from multiple people I trust, which is why I'm going to come here with it. The Giants were firing Brian Daboll off the plane after the collapse in Denver.
Really?
He was fired.
Fired?
And ownership got together. Cooler heads prevailed. And they decided not to fire Brian Daboll off the plane in Denver. But in the immediacy of that collapse, the decision to throw on 3rd and 5, like Tiki had crushed after that game, mm-hmm. enough apparently was enough from people of importance with the Giants that he was fired off the plane in Denver, and cooler heads have prevailed, which has now led to stories about the split ticket. Brian Daboll's as good as gone and was basically gone 2 weeks ago.
Wow.
If not for somebody stepping up within ownership and calming that down.
Now, you don't know the specific names because I can just surmise myself.
You can surmise. I will tell you that the person making the decision to fire him was not Joe Shane mm-hmm. in that moment, mm-hmm. but you could surmise from there.
It's ownership.
Ownership.
To me, I've always said this. Me and John Mara have a lot in common. We're both fans. We're both diehard fans. We both get angry when our team loses. So I would surmise that John Mara wanted him fired, and then maybe he was, as you said, talked out of it. That shows you that he is dead man walking, Brian Daboll, that it is very difficult to survive this season if he was already halfway fired. And you know what that reminds me of? If your reporting is true, and I have no reason to believe it's not, I'm going to choose to trust you because, boy, do you talk to a lot of annoying people.
Would I be coming here today? Have I ever done that in the history of the show?
No. You don't just say stuff for attention or make stuff up. But it actually reminds me of Woody Johnson wanting to bench Aaron Rodgers after a loss to Denver and he having to be talked out of it.
Yeah.
And then ultimately, and the reason I say that is because ultimately that showed you the handwriting that was on the wall and eventually Aaron Rodgers was gone. Or obviously, they didn't bring him back.
Sure.
And a lot of that's connected to ownership. If you already have higher ups in the Giant organization, I am surmising it is ownership. I am surmising it would be Mr. Mara already ready to fire the man in the middle of a season, then it's over. And there's nothing that can change that.
It is over. And as somebody here, and I've been vocal about being a Brian Daboll supporter, who am I to defend it anymore? I mean, and you look back in hindsight, Denver was embarrassing. I might have tried to sweep under the rug. I know Tiki was aggravated about it. But it's a long line of 4 years, or I guess really 3 years, of embarrassments from this Giant team. And the Giants were a punchline and a laughingstock, and that appeared to be at least temporarily a final straw. So, look, what does that mean? Does Brian Daboll coach out the string these last few weeks? Is there going to be another moment where the team decides to fire? Maybe, I don't know. But if you had already made that decision, I'm with you, Evan, after the Denver game, there's no point in even conversing that what can Brian Daboll do to save his job? He's toast. He's toast. I don't see how he could. And then it will just lead to further questions about, well, why the hell is Joe Shane here with him?
I have some questions.
Okay.
Because you seem to know. Did it ever get to Brian Daboll? Was Brian Daboll ever fired and then unfired Steinbrenner-like?
I tried to find that out. I truly do not know. It does lead me to questions about Brian Dable's face and maybe Pat Leonard asked him if he was crying after last week's game. But... I truly do not know, and I don't have concrete evidence it ever got to Brian Daboll. Unfortunately, I'm assuming it'll get to him now, but yes.
So you're saying after the Denver game, and of course, for those that are forgetting, that was the epic fourth quarter collapse, which featured, and there were many plays that we could go over, but certainly Tiki was crazily about that third down play in which Jackson Dart dropped back to pass. He ended up throwing an interception, but a lot of it wasn't even about the interception. It was about the play call and the fact that they were throwing the ball and the fact that it was a coaching malpractice of a decision. That game in particular caused someone in ownership or in the front office to say, I'm done with Brian Daboll, I'm firing him, and needed to be talked out of it.
Yes, that's exactly what happened. And here we are. Here we are, and the losses continue to mount since. And it is worth noting, because Kohler did bring this up, which also made me think of it, how ridiculous it is that this team is going to be featured in the NFC East Hard Knocks with the cameras in the building.
Yeah, yeah.
How did the Giants become a walking punchline to the NFL on that show? Are they going to drag this out once those cameras come in? And we kind of poo-pooed the caller when he said that the other day. It's making me wonder. I mean, we got 2 weeks until that really starts filming. Is Brian Daboll going to survive these 2 weeks? I don't know.
Well, look, I remember arguing with you guys about this last year. The idea of firing a coach in the middle of the season does nothing. It really serves very little purpose. And we saw the impact it had on the Jets a year ago. It made things worse. The one area where I'd pause where it may be different with the New York Giants is to give Mike Kafka a look. And also, if you've firmly decided, this guy's gone, I'm not bringing him back, there's nothing that can happen over the final weeks of the season that's going to change my mind, then why keep him around?
Sure.
Like, only bad things can happen, whether it's running with Jackson Dart late in games down by 30 points where there could be a brutal injury, or decisions that are made are not in the betterment of the team. So what I would say to the Giants, and I've gotten to this place already, but I don't run the New York Giants. I'm just the guy on the radio. If I've gotten to the place running the New York Football Giants where I know Brian Daboll is not my guy and he's not my head coach and I'm not bringing him back for 2026, then this would be one of those rare circumstances where it would make sense to fire him now. Remove any possibility of him doing any kind of damage to this team over the final how many weeks of the season, and then simultaneously give Mike Kafka a relatively fair opportunity to coach this team and see what it looks like. This is the first time where I can move into that area and say it could make sense given the circumstances.
I could hear the argument for it making sense, but if I play devil's advocate on a second, I would ask this. What is the reason that you get talked out of firing a guy after Denver? It probably has to do with Jackson Thornton. The fact that, you know what, under any circumstance, we don't want to throw more problems in this kid's way. And clearly, at a bare minimum, Dable's doing a good job with Jackson Dart.
Right.
So if you're going to do that, then have Kafka coach him. You're also then asking a locker room that right now is just watching another season spiral to control. Do you think they're really going to be woken up by firing the head coach in there? Is that really giving Kafka a fair look if he starts coaching what becomes an even deader locker room?
I don't know. If you look back, and Jason Garrett's always the one that jumps out at me, where we did see an interim head coach survive and become the full-time head coach, sometimes there can be a level of success. If you go back to Dallas when Jerry Jones decided to fire Wade Phillips and Jason Garrett got the opportunity to coach the team the rest of the season, obviously he did a good enough job to keep the job. Antonio Pierce did a good enough job to keep the job. Like, there are examples where guys get that interim tag and the team doesn't just collectively quit. My point to you is, if they've already decided that Brian Daboll isn't the answer, And based on what you're telling me, somebody pretty powerful in Giant ownership did, because they were ready to fire him 2 weeks ago, then keeping him around for the final 7-8 weeks of the year could probably do more harm than good. And again, I am not a proponent usually of firing a coach in the middle of the season because I don't think it serves a purpose. But in this case,
it might.
It may actually serve a purpose.
And certainly the team has not responded in the 2 weeks that have followed that game regardless anyway. So, I mean, the idea that he hasn't been in the couple weeks that have followed probably tells me that they want to try to make it through the full season, right? Otherwise, you made that decision. Nothing has changed in the 2 weeks since, and yet he's still the head coach. But I don't know. I don't know if giving Mike Kafka a look, if that's a fair representation of it. Because what if it goes bad? Then you're going to ultimately assume that he can't be a head coach either?
Not necessarily. It wouldn't help. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, it's a tough spot. I'm probably not going to be in a rush to hire him.
Crush Spagnuolo as a head coach as well for a second opportunity. Remember when he got to be an interim on a team that was basically dead in the water? He did nothing to help that team. And then whoever viewed him as a true head coaching candidate.
But the one difference is if Mike Kafka takes over for a fired Brian Daboll is he's got this young stud of a quarterback that he gets to play with. And so I would say he has a better chance of succeeding than most other coaches.
But are you hurting the quarterback's development if you fire the offensive-minded head coach who's trying to mold him and his play caller has to now put more on his plate?
Are you hurting the quarterback's development to keep a head coach that you've already decided you're firing? You've already decided. Clearly, if it's true, and you know what? The proof's going to be in the pudding, bro. I believe you.
Yeah.
But if this man comes back for 2026, then I'll probably sit back and say, was he really almost fired in Denver?
Right.
But if he loses his job, they delayed it. They didn't want to do it in the middle of the season. It's a bad look. The Giants had done it once before, the whole Ben McAdoo situation. They don't want to do it again.
Yeah.
But if you've already decided he's not the guy,
then just make him not the
guy. And here's the other problem. And this is like the bigger issue. And I put this poll out a couple of days ago because I was genuinely curious how Giant fans feel about this. And that is, who do you blame more for the current state of this team? Who's done a worse job at their job? Brian Daboll, who was almost fired 2 weeks ago, or Joe Shane? And when I put that poll out, it was like an even split. 51% said Brian Daboll, 49% said Joe Shane. And you know what that tells me? You know what that tells me?
What does it tell you?
Scientifically and unscientifically, they have both failed.
They have.
They have both done a miserable job, and they have equal blame and equal sharing of blame for the state of the New York Football Giants. So whoever decided Brian Daboll needed to be fired 2 weeks ago, I would ask them very calmly and respectfully a follow-up question. What about Shane?
I completely agree.
Because he's done a crappy job, too.
It was absurd in the previous regime that Dave Gettleman got to hire a second head coach. And it will be just as absurd that Joe Shane gets to. And any good you want to point to with Joe Shane, whether that is Malik Nabers, yes, he did trade up for Jackson Dart. But as we've seen on camera, that was Brian Daboll loved Jackson Dart. We know that Joe Shane tried to trade for Matt Stafford. We know he tried to trade up for Cam Ward. How many victory laps can you really take about bringing the quarterback in here? I don't know how you objectively look at the Giant problems. Here's a better way to ask this. If I were to say to you, you got a clean slate 3 years from now, it's Joe Shane with a different head coach, or it's another GM hired Brian Daboll somewhere else to be a head coach, who do you think is a better chance of success?
Are you on my ass answer?
Yeah.
Neither.
Okay. But I do think most people would tend to, if I had to pick one, there's a better coach in Daboll than there is a general manager in Shane.
Well, I think both of them, if we're being objectively fair about this, and I'm trying to as an IFO, there are things on their resume that are good. There are things on their resume that are impressive. Brian Daboll was coach of the year and took that team to the postseason and showed a lot of guts and set the tone early in the season and, in my opinion, overachieved with what he had. Bravo.
Yeah.
That's a check mark on his resume.
It is.
Joe Shane has hit some home runs in the draft. He's hit some home runs in trades. Obviously, acquiring Brian Burns looks pretty brilliant.
Great trade.
With that said, here's what both of them are judged by, and this is something that no one can fight. Their record.
Yeah, and it's abysmal.
And it's abysmal, and it reminds me of Joe Douglas. I would sit here, even with you, Sean, and say, well, Joe Douglas, he drafted this guy, drafted that guy, drafted this guy. And the ultimate retort to any defense of Joe Douglas's individual drafts would be his record. And right now, when I look at the record of Joe Shane and the record of Brian Daboll, neither guy deserves to keep their job. So when I hear, and I believe you, hey, they were about to fire Brian Daboll 2 weeks ago, or I hear Paul Schwartz say, hey, could be a split ticket.
Right.
My answer is, and I'm pretty confident I represent most Giant fans when I say this, is neither one of them deserves to remain here. Both of them share in responsibility for the state of the New York Giants, just like they share in responsibility for the good. We love Jackson Dart. Who do we give credit to? I'll give credit to both guys.
Right. You still have to execute the trade.
Of course.
That's part of your job. I get that.
And so for that, good job, Joe Shane. For Brian Daboll standing on the table saying, get me Jackson Dart, I give him credit. But ultimately, their record is abysmal. So when I hear you say Brian Daboll was almost fired 2 weeks ago before he got off the plane or before he got on the plane, my simple retort is, what about Joe Shane?
I'm with you.
Because they're both doing a terrible job. And I think that that poll I put out 2 days ago represents that it's such a tough battle. It's like a giant civil war. Who do you blame more? Who sucks more? Who's worse at their job? It's 50-50 because everybody wants an option C that says all of them.
There are not enough good football players on the New York Football Giants. There's not enough good depth when you have injuries like we've seen at the cornerback position where the whole team becomes a house of cards. It's Joe Shane's job to put those players on the roster. Brian Daboll can coach them, and he hasn't done a good enough job of doing that. I don't know what anybody thinks is going to change by Joe Shane remaining here and Brian Daboll being fired, which is absolutely inevitable since he was nearly fired after Denver.
So, Giant fans, do you want the New York Giants to do what they almost did 2 weeks ago, according to Sean Morash, which is pull the trigger and fire Brian Daboll? And who do you blame more for this current mess? We'll get to your calls coming up, 888-808.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
At Marisa's, we're all about great jeans. You know, the ones that fit you just right. The ones that simply make you feel good. Because you don't just wear jeans, you live in them. Find great jeans starting at $29.90 in stores and at Marisa's.com.
Let's go to John in Massbeth. What's up, John?
How's it going, guys? So, if you guys want to play another game, I posted and toasted. Somebody tweeted 2 days ago, interesting tidbit. I was just told from a source, Mara was sent to fire Daboll after the Denver game, but he was stopped. I'll give you three guesses on who stopped it.
Wait a second.
You only need one.
Wait a second. So someone else tweeted the story?
I just tagged you guys in a tweet. So if you guys want to see
John, was it a reporter? Oh, I see. Okay.
Some co-host of some podcast.
I'm unfamiliar with her, but...
Sean, are you stealing the news of a podcast host?
So it's a Nikki Gist?
Yes. Oh, Nikki Gist. Big fan.
Interesting tidbit. I was just told from a source. Marrow set the fire Daboll after the Denver game, but he was stopped. I'll give you three guesses on who stopped it, but I bet you only need one.
I need
it becomes
a few
like
guesses.
A goofy tweet. Either way, I would just say this. Good sources, Nikki.
Wow, so you and Nikki on the same page on this.
Yeah,
good sources. This is now a rumbling that Brian Daboll was fired 2 weeks ago, but needed to be stopped.
Yeah. I mean, she's saying everything I said, so I can't fight. She clearly has good sources, too.
Look at
maybe,
that.
You know, maybe the Giants should be more concerned with the leaky sheetrock in that building.
Is that a new report or an old report?
They should be. That's leaking out all over the place.
Yeah, a lot of leaking.
You know what that means? What's next is, first we got Nikki Gist, who I'm not really familiar with, but I'm sure she does a great job.
Yeah. I mean, clearly she has, I can confirm, good sources.
Yeah, right off the top, we're impressed. Yeah. Sean Morash of WFAN, plus the host of numerous Giants podcasts. You know what's next? Art Stapleton is next.
Art.
Pat Leonard is next. And before you know it, Bob Papa's going to say it on the broadcast.
I got to be honest, I'm almost disappointed in Pat. Because this is Pat. Pat would love a good Daboll firing story. I mean, the guy's been trying to do it for 2 years anyway.
He doesn't have it yet.
Yeah.
Let's go to Ben in Brooklyn. What's going on, Ben?
Hey, what's going on? Here's the issue with the Giants. And Tommy touched on it earlier in the show. Graham Gano is a piece of a puzzle that Daboll cannot figure out how to put together. 4 years ago, the Giants had a trashy team, thanks to who knows what. Turns out they had a good quarterback back then. And they made the playoffs. For the last 3 years, we haven't had a freaking winning season. We've sucked. Daboll needs to go, and Joe Shane needs to go, because he's the guy who puts the team together that Daboll can't seem to figure out how to win a game.
I mean, it's well said. Yeah. Because the truth is, and I rack my brain over this, I look at the roster, and this is so impossible to do. You could try this in every sport, and it's always tough to know the answer. I look at the roster, and I look at the injuries. I want to be fair to the injuries the Giants have dealt with, much like every other team in the NFL.
Yeah.
And I say to myself, okay, would a better coach have a significantly better record? And this is going to sound like a defensive Daboll, but I'm being honest, and the answer is probably not.
Right.
They just suck.
Year four, you should have better depth to handle injuries.
1,000%.
And injuries can ravage anybody's season. And nobody's the 49er roster. You know, they've dealt with this for years. But you just saw what a team very banged up could do on a football field with proper depth.
But, Sean, there's also a difference between winning a few games with a lot of injuries and being 5-22 in your last 27 games.
Yes,
and that's what they are. So I would actually argue that based on the roster construction, it feels like Joe Shane has actually been worse at his job than Brian Daboll.
No doubt.
But Brian Daboll is not exactly, you know, reminding you of Vince Lombardi. But when you look at the roster and you say, okay, what does a good coach do with this? I don't think it's much different, which is not a defensive Daboll.
Right.
It's more a indictment on the fact that Joe Shane, who's been here for 4 years now, has not exactly turned the franchise around.
Yeah, when we start a season with, well, how can you expect this team to win any games? Look at the tough schedule. Sure, they had the toughest schedule in football. But if in year four you've built a good enough roster, even if you're not screaming that you're winning 11, 12 games, can you find a way to be in the mix in the middle of the pack with 8 wins in the NFL with a roster like that? And the coach and GM have failed miserably.
I disagree with both of you. I think the GM should keep his job. They have the personnel. They just don't have the coaching.
Do they? Should Corey Black and Tay Banks be starting
corners
in the NFL?
You're going to go to backup cornerbacks. Look at the defensive line. But there's a lot of teams that deal with injuries. They have the quarterback. They have a running back. They have a wide receiver. They're going to add another wide receiver in the draft. If you like the fact that Shane drafted Neighbors, I trust him to draft another player like Neighbors. The coaching staff has failed them. They're on their third defensive coordinator, basically, when Bowen's gone.
Yeah,
I think the GM has put the right personnel on the field. The coaching staff stinks. Why do the 49ers win games? Because they're well coached. Shanahan's a great coach. Saleh's a great coordinator. I think Shane has done a better job and has more of a leg to stand on to keep
his job. Let me ask you this. Last year's team, they went 3-14. Mm-hmm. What would their record be? What should their record be with competent head coaching, in your opinion?
Last year, I think
3-14 team. Okay, so that's what they did.
Well, I think the right head coach would have coached Tommy DeVito up, obviously, to more wins.
To what? Give me a number.
Five or six wins. But hold on a second, though. God. But on a better team next year, those 3 wins that a better head coach will give you will get you to 10 wins, will get you to 7 wins. You see what I'm saying? They're ready to win next year with Dart, and Brian Daboll is not the head coach to get you wins.
I think it's an extra win with good coaching, but not much more. You know what I mean? Like, I think that the roster is so bad, especially the lack of depth, especially last year with the offensive line, that I'll give you a game. Like, I'll give you that, because you're right. I don't think the coach has done a good job at all. But I don't know if I can give you more than that.
How many wins has Mike Vrabel meant for the Patriots? They're 7-2 right now.
But their roster's a lot better.
Is it?
Yeah.
Not really.
Yeah.
Not, they didn't
Mike
really...
Mike Vrabel's a better head coach.
And McDaniels, they have a better coordinator. But, coaching
Tommy,
gets you a lot of wins in the
Tommy.
NFL. Just look at the Jets. Would they have not won more games last year, Ev, if they had better coaching with Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams?
But again, I think they had more talent. Like, I think a part of it is... Here's the thing, bro. I don't think you're wrong. I don't think you're wrong. Coach has done a terrible job. I also think the roster kind of sucks.
Like, you just...
Like, I think you're overrating the roster.
He just said this. He goes, they got Malik Nabers. They'll add another receiver.
He's not even playing.
Dude, it's year four, and their answer behind Nabers was Jalen Hyatt, who was deactive 2 weeks ago. They re-signed Darius Slayton, who drops everything thrown at him.
No, that was a terrible move.
But you know why they
brought Slayton back? Because he's a leader, and they've let a lot of leaders go. That's why they did that. You had the Giants in the playoffs next year. So they obviously have talent. So now they don't have talent. You had them in the playoffs next year.
I agree. I think that another big offseason ahead should get them to the playoffs with this kind of... I think the quarterback's good enough to overcome a lot of it. And I do think that's where I have to bend my knee and go, I was wrong on the coach. They're not good enough right now. They are good enough when the team is healthy. The moment we saw the injury start in the Denver game, the team has collapsed. They can't survive injuries when other teams in the NFL can't. So it's everything about the GM and coach.
They both suck. They're both very bad. Like, you're right about Dave. I'm not arguing with you about that. I don't think it's not a good enough job at all. But I also think the roster's terrible, especially the depth. Like, injuries
That's
are
it.
Part of football, man. Like, it happens.
He's built a good starting 22. He's not built a good enough roster behind that.
Yeah.
And that's it. Bottom line. Not good enough.
So you'd keep Shane, get rid of Dable.
I would.
You think Shane's done a good job?
I do. I think the Giants...
A good job.
Yes. I think they're three or four players away from being a... What are you laughing at?
That's a lot of players.
Free agency in the draft, they can't add three or four more like good players to get this team to the next step.
With an easier schedule, could they win 10 games with a good head coach and adding three? Sure they could. But then what's the step after that?
I just think that Joe Shane has done a better job of building the roster of this team than Brian Daboll has done of coaching this team. And when guys get hurt, you know what? That's on the coach to win with backups.
But again, when I put that poll out, it's 50-50. There's plenty of people that would agree, like, yeah, Daboll's done a worse job, this guy. But you're saying Shane's done a good job. Forget about comparing him to Daboll. You think, like, if you look at his 4 years here, and you had to grade him, like you're a teacher, right? A, B, C, D. Those are the grades, right? F, too, as well. I think that's also a letter. Never got those. I was always smart enough to get a D. What would you grade him over the 4 years he's been here?
I would give him a B+.
Wow.
I'm giving him credit for Dart. He still has to sign off on that.
Wow.
He deserves credit for Nabers. Wow. Scataboo was a steal. He drafted Carter. He traded for Burns. He drafted Kayvon.
You know who I could do that with, too, though?
I know you could do it with Joe Douglas. Evan.
I know. He drafted Sauce Gardner. He drafted Garrett Wilson.
But what didn't he draft? The quarterback.
No, I agree. But does that give you enough extra points to supersede not building out the rest of your roster?
Yes.
Okay.
The quarterback's the most important position.
He's been here 4 years. He's had four first rounds. Tay Banks and Evan Neal were picks in two of them. They're unplayable. He's watched Julian Love and Xavier McKinney go thrive elsewhere and did not enough to replace him. He sucks. Period. He sucks. Hasn't done a good enough job building. But hey, let him hire another head coach and be here for the next 3 years, and then we'll watch Jackson Dart be an awesome quarterback for the Seahawks in 2030.
What? Table this for a second. I want you both to go into your corners, do some research. Tomorrow at 3:30 p.m. right here on WFAN, a Lou Gehrig debate series. Who sucks more? Brian Daboll or Joe Shane?
I actually don't hate you for that.
And the best part is Tiki's going to get to judge that. I can't wait. Are you ready? Do your research, both of you guys. Be prepared. No mistakes. Tomorrow, 3:30, right here on The Fan.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You open the fridge. There's nothing there. So what's it going to be? Greasy pizza? Sad drive-through burgers? Dish by Blue Apron is for nights like that. These are the pre-made meals of your dreams. At least 20 grams of protein, no artificial flavors or colors, no chopping, no cleanup, no guilt. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
At Marisa's, we're all about great jeans. You know, the ones that fit you just right. The ones that simply make you feel good. Because you don't just wear jeans, you live in them. Find great jeans starting at $29.90 in stores and at Marisa's.com.
The Giants are 2-7. Are you into this Marash report? Should I play it?
Marash report?
What is this?
I don't know the Marash report. Okay. This is how the show started yesterday with Evan and Sean. I don't think Tiki was there. I think it was Sean and Evan.
Tiki wasn't
there. I'm not sure. I don't know. From what I saw, I just saw Sean and Evan. And this is how Sean essentially early on opened up the show.
So I've done some poking around. I've done some digging around. And I've now gotten this from multiple people I trust, which is why I'm going to come here with it. The Giants were firing Brian Daboll off the plane after the collapse in Denver.
Really?
He was fired.
Fired.
So then what happened?
Ownership got together, cooler heads prevailed, and they decided not to fire Brian Daboll off the plane in Denver.
But he was fired. It is over.
Brian Daboll's as good as gone and was basically gone 2 weeks ago.
Wow.
If not for somebody stepping up within ownership and calming that down.
Is Evan smoking?
What do you mean?
Why?
Hear his... Wow. That's
really?
Amazing.
Wow, maybe tell me more. Deepening his voice.
That sounds like Evan smoking. That is very deep. Anyway, here was who wanted him fired.
I will tell you that the person making the decision to fire him was not Joe Shane mm-hmm. in that moment, mm-hmm. but you could surmise from there.
It's ownership.
Ownership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's the high pitch back.
The high pitch was back.
Ownership.
Yeah.
Let's see which one is
ownership.
Really?
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 Ownership.
Really?
Like Tyrese Halliburton.
Yes, that's right. Two different people.
I was busy yesterday, but I didn't think, I read Al's show sheet. I don't think it was on there either. I had no idea about that, the Marash thing. I had no clue.
Yeah, you know, when I was telling Jerry, like when I saw it on social media, I just blew right past it.
Those guys working hard
are always yelling about something. I can't, like, you can't, like, I don't know. It's like crying wolf.
I mean, like, if you, he's yelling about something for sure, but this is different. This is a different thing. This is not yelling about a player or bad coaching move. This is actually telling you that he has spoken to people where he knows that the coach was going to be fired off the plane when they got back from Denver.
Really?
Yeah.
I think the problem is there's put out so much content that you can't stop at everything. What made me stop, though, was there was a blonde gal on social media that said,
big boobs.
That said, oh, for Sean Marash, I was your source. So then I clicked on her because I found that interesting. And she hosts some sort of sports podcast in Queens. That she claimed Sean got that information from her.
Call her up and get her on. We'll talk to her this morning.
What's her name?
On the internet.
By the way, like when I put in Brian Daboll and news, there's not a single like headline about this. Not one.
So this wasn't viral?
So like if I understand it's different between Sean and Boomer, but if Boomer had said that, the headlines would be all over the place.
Well, former MVP.
See, I love Sean, but this is like one of the things where, like some of the things that he's done bits in the past. Like if someone's like, oh wow, this guy has a report, and then they say, well, what's he been doing? Oh,
pooping his pants, getting covered in bird seed, and getting pecked at by pigeons, swishing dirty water in his mouth on Boomer and Geo. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, you know, he's an entertainer for sure. I mean,
Tommy DeVito made a chicken parm out of him.
I mean, Zach Gelb kind of did the same thing to Urban Meyer, right?
Yeah, but
they're
just saying
it differently, but it's essentially the same thing about news about a particular person that either could be looking for a job or a person that should have lost a job.
Yes, but I do think G's point is when you Google Sean, a lot of goofy stuff comes up. Zach really doesn't. You just see interviews and talk shows.
I mean, I saw Zach yesterday, and you know, and I said, "Hey, good job on your report. If you know, just as long as you have sources, good for you. As long as those sources are reasonable and legit, then good for you."
I'm just picturing someone going, "Oh man, like, oh, all right, Sean Marais, let me see," and then they see Tommy DeVito grating cheese over his head on a stage, and they go, "Okay, maybe we don't take this one so seriously." Yeah. This is the guy with the Serious Giants report. We're pouring marinara on his chest.
So here's what I got to say about that. Here's what I got to say about that.
Oh, my God.
And then his nipples. What is he doing?
Don't you remember this?
I was behind.
I
didn't see that.
There's DeVito with the breadcrumbs.
I think I was disgusted at this point.
And then Marash pulls out his phone getting texts like Schefter gets.
Yeah, right. Hold on, guys. John Mara on the horn here.
Two things about what we just showed. Number one, I really appreciated that Sean did that for us.
Of course.
That's a totally different
discussion.
But I know that, but I can't use that and him being a great sport against what he did yesterday.
You wouldn't, but G's point is some random NFL fan might Google it.
I know that. I just want to push back against that NFL fan, whoever that one may be, say, "Oh, look at this guy, and he's coming out with this." I mean, I love the fact that he did that for us.
Well, of course.
So I want to be loyal and thankful to him for doing this ridiculous thing for us. Right. And then Tommy DeVito in the middle of it. That was awesome.
Listen, this was my idea, right? So, I'm as responsible for this as anybody, if not the sole person responsible for it.
Right.
I love the fact that he did it. I love the fact that he dressed up as a giant baby, because that was my idea too, and he sang "All I Want for Christmas Is You," and he came out in a crib with a fake cigar
and got booed off the stage.
I appreciate all that. That's not what I'm saying.
Okay.
What I'm saying is that there could be, we know Sean, we love Sean, he did stuff for us. I feel like I don't have to over-explain this, but I'm doing it anyway.
But I feel like you do, because you know why I feel that way? I just feel that way because, you know, people may be seeing this for the first time.
Yeah, okay.
They may be. I mean, he is a colleague of ours.
What I'm saying is that it could, if you are someone in a different state who's covering the NFL, this is my point.
Right. Yeah.
And this is why it's funny to me. If you don't know anything about the radio station, you don't know us, you don't know Boomer and Geo Live, what it's about, it's showing, they look up and see, wow, this guy's got some big news here. And then that video pops up of him wearing a bun. And getting breadcrumbs sprinkled on his head. It's just a funny visual. That's all.
It is 100% visual. But I want to go back to his thing that he did yesterday. So what he did yesterday, he was that to me sounded like it was serious.
Yeah, of course it was.
Yeah,
that wasn't a joke. That wasn't a bit.
I don't think so.
Right, but the problem is it was so many weeks ago and nothing happened. So I don't know that even if Boomer came out and said it, I'm not sure that that's news. You know what I mean? Like, nothing happened. He's not been fired. They've lost multiple games since then.
I think, if at the end of the year, let's put it this way, let's put a caveat on it, Brian Daboll ends up getting fired, then you could look back at this and you could probably say that maybe he was correct. Maybe he was accurate. Maybe the people he is talking to gave him inside information that, you know, that he ran with. I mean,
it's totally believable that could have happened. But I mean, I feel like that stuff could happen a lot in the NFL. Like, we're going to fire this guy right now. I'm so embarrassed. And Woody Johnson actually did it after the Jets lost to the Vikings in London. I'm so embarrassed. And they fired him. It was a disaster. And they were probably like, "I'm so embarrassed. We blew this lead." And then someone was like, "No, chill out. It's all right. We can deal with it at the end of the year." We don't need to be going crazy right now.
We'll give the job to a guy who can't do the job.
Yeah. But I do know that ownership in general, just ownership around professional sports, you know, there are moments where they have these come to Jesus minutes or moments, I should say, and all of a sudden they fire somebody.
I'm Boomer Esiason with your come to Jesus minute.
and they fire somebody just like without really thinking it through what the aftermath is going to look like.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
They get way too emotional.
And I'm sure the cooling heads that prevailed probably said, we're going to put Mike Kafka or Shane Bowen in charge of this team? No. Like, you see what happened with Ulbrich last year over there, the other side of things? Not good.
No, not good.
BT, another Football Friday here. Two losing teams to discuss, and the top story is going to continue to be the status of Brian Daboll and Joe Shane. Now, we've talked about this throughout the course of the week. I guess there were some developments yesterday on the afternoon show talking about the story that the Giants almost fired Daboll. That's great. Almost fired him. Did they or did they not?
They almost won the lottery, too. Almost.
He's still the head coach, so I'm not getting into the whole reports or conflicting. I couldn't care less. Good for Sean. Good for the people on social media who had it. I really don't care. What I care is what is. And what is Brian Daboll is currently the head coach of the New York Football Giants, and maybe these final eight games, he could do something to determine his fate. I would have already made that decision. I know where you stand on that. My biggest concern with this whole thing is that it just feels like the Giants. Now, I could be wrong. Again, I'm not pretending to be reporting anything here, but just from the stuff that we hear and some of the stuff that is being reported, it just feels like within the Giants organization that, and this goes back to even last year, that they would keep Shane and not Daboll. And I think that that's the worst thing they could do. And even with the young rookie quarterback, stud rookie quarterback, with all the potential and excitement, there's still such a dark cloud over this organization with now the uncertainty of Joe Shane and Brian Daboll.
Yeah, and I think it's going to get darker. I really do. I think that the one thing you can't have happen the rest of the way is complete and utter turmoil and disarray. And on the heels of the report and the conversation yesterday that you just referenced with Sean and some others, like, all right, if they were going to fire him after the Denver game, they decided not to. Well, that shows you what they really think of him. And you're probably one bad game away maybe from being fired this season. And I think everything's on the table at this point here. When you look at the next eight games, see, the next four are an opportunity for every anti-Daboll voice to say, because I don't think they're going to win this weekend. And if they do, that changes things a little bit. But if they don't beat the Bears, I don't think you're beating Green Bay, the Lions, or up in New England either. So there's a very good chance they lose their next four. And if the Bears game particularly is ugly, if it is ugly, I think we might get some swift action right after game.
I was going to say, they still have the bye week coming in 4 weeks.
Yeah.
I would now, and you know, this week I've been saying just end it already. And I'm not trying to get people to lose their jobs. And I've been a Daboll supporter, so this is not a Daboll witch hunt like some others in the media. I just feel like I personally have reached the conclusion that it's time for a change. We would have done that a year ago. I gave out hope that he could get things going with Jackson Dart. And even with the success of finding the rookie quarterback and having some success, it's still not good enough because of the defense, because of the kicking situation, because of the way they cough up leads. It's just the whole thing for me is not good enough. I would make that decision now. Move on from Shane. Move on from Daboll. So you don't have all this nonsense and speculation. And it could just be about trying to finish as strong as they can with Kafka handling the reins here and having the Giants look to the future by knowing they're going to need to replace these two.
I got
to
say one thing, though, because you just said it, and I've said it as well. And we say it because we're sensitive to people's livelihoods, really.
Wow.
And it's coming from a very good place, right? But, like, in what world do we have to offer context to, you know, providing, you know, strong opinions on somebody's job security when all you do is lose? Right. I mean, like, if we were having this conversation about Aaron Glenn, like maybe some people were, you know, before they beat Cincinnati, or if they don't win again the rest of the way, which, by the way, obviously Glenn's coming back next year. But, you know, maybe that's where you want to offer a little bit more contextualization. Like, you know, hey, because it's 1 year, 2-7, 2-7, 2-7. What are we doing? It's like we're jumping through hoops and skipping rope and going through all these physical and mental gymnastics to explain why we don't think that Brian Daboll should be back for year five when the last three have been terrible.
Right. There's no...
What are we doing?
I do understand the thought process of not wanting to blow everything up, and especially when you feel like they identified their franchise quarterback and have shown that they could have some success. However, you can't sit there with a straight face and tell me that you don't think you could do better than Brian Daboll and Joe Shane, and look at their record for the 4 years. It's just not good enough. So, well, you're going to hold out the hope that maybe Daboll could get a turnaround next year with Jackson Dart? He might be able to. Nobody's saying definitively that they're going to win three games again or two games again through the first nine next year. You don't know. You would hope it would be better with Neighbors back, with Scadaboo, with a whole nother year. But I can't guarantee that. And the way that Joe Shane has picked players and the way that things have gone, and there's a litany of reasons. It's not just the records off of one bad year. It's a culmination of 4 years of ineptitude to the highest levels, futility to the highest levels, a horrific record.
Like in the division, against Philly and Dallas. I mean, embarrassed very, very often. You know, think about this. Imagine if Aaron Boone had three straight years of 74 wins, right? Or Mendoza won 72 games 3 years in a row. Or Tom Thibodeau, or now Mike Brown, had records of 29 and whatever the rest of the math is to equal 82. I haven't had enough coffee yet to get that very quickly. Is anybody getting on the air saying, well, you know, I don't know if we should make a change. I just don't understand. And I am not trying to be callous, but I guess I'm done presenting this softly. Like the Giants, the standard has to be the standard.
Think about it.
I get this.
I love that you just brought in the other examples in this town. Find me the other combination in this town that has failed worse than Shane and Daboll and is still around.
Yeah, the only thing that was close, and it wasn't even to this extent, was the Douglas and Robert Saleh.
And
it wasn't even as bad as this.
That's my point. They're gone, right? So the Rangers went with the new head coach when even their prior regime had more success than Shane and Daboll have ever had. New head coach. Carlos Mendoza is on the hot seat in year three after taking a team, a Mets team, to the NLCS a couple of years ago.
Yep.
He's on the hot seat, and his team won 83 games. Like, the equivalent is not even fair.
No. That's why I went like with 72 games, or
it's not even close.
I don't even know if that's fair. It's probably in the 60s. That's why I bring that up. I just
Hedgman and Boone.
Yeah, well, exactly.
People call to all the time talking about firing those guys. All they do is win every year and get to the postseason. Yeah. It's not even close.
I'm not even saying that it should be. Maybe in the eyes of some, it's a little different for Cashman because there was so much success. Right. So there's a different layer of analysis here. But if you didn't have any prior, if you didn't carve out this legacy here, like Cashman, love or hate Cashman, the guy's going to be in the Hall of Fame, right? I believe that, and I think many other people around baseball
do. Earned it.
He's earned it with all the championship. He's been a great executive, even if we're tired of it a little bit.
And the sustained success, even without the championships, I know that that's a huge part of it, but show me the other franchise in sports, period, that has had as much sustained success for 30 freaking years than the New York Yankees.
Well, there is none. And that's really what I'm saying here, Sal. Think about this. So we go through this every single summer about Cashman, to a lesser extent to Aaron Boone. Whenever the Yankees get banged out in October, which is always before we want them to, we go through the same conversations. What about the manager? What about the GM? What about ownership? But yet here we are talking about the Giants. Like, I don't know. Should the Giants move on from Brian Daboll? What do you think? They don't win.
We need to start raising the expectations. And that's why I would just stop the... Now, look, you alluded to this the other day. I don't even want to get into the health part of it because it's just such a horrible thing. And that's beyond sports. That's much more important. Mr. Mara and his battle with his illness and his life, that's much more important than the results of sports. But what we do is talk about the sports. So I understand that that's going to be... It's going to alter maybe the timeline of some of these decisions, or maybe have some kind of impact that we don't necessarily want to get into. But if you just go based off of what they have done here, you can't tell me that Mr. Merrick gave Daboll and Shane every opportunity to succeed here. He was patient. He gave them chances, multiple quarterbacks. It's definitive in my mind that they need to move on and they can do better. We need to start raising our expectations here. Okay, there's potential. Great, they got the quarterback. Now find somebody who can actually win some football games, or draft players that can help you win some football games. Shane has been awful at his job, and Daboll has not been anywhere near good enough.
We're on the same page here, and the Daboll stuff is probably a little bit easier because we can just point to 2-7, 2-7, 2-7, whatever, the things that are a little bit more tangible. Whereas with Shane, I think in the eyes of some, Joe probably gets not our eyes, but in the eyes of some, maybe a little separation from Dable or a reprieve or maybe even a respite from being possibly fired?
I'd like to know how. But...
Well, that's where I'm going. Like, what's the justification for that? The Giants have injuries, which every other team in the NFL does. Look at the depth. I mean, the depth is directly correlated to the general manager doing his job at a high level. So, to me, there's really two ways to look at this, right? Number one, do you think that those two men have gotten a fair shake? And to me, it is unequivocally yes. Right. They've had a long runway, with all due respect, to get this thing going. The other point of analysis would be, and this is more about Dable, do you want to risk the marriage or the relationship, the comfort level, however you want to frame it, the ascent of Jackson Dart, by taking away a head coach that he's obviously played pretty well for? And my answer will be yes, because I think there's other coaches who would be better at all the other stuff and would be equally successful with Jackson Dart.
BT and Sal and the Fan, our friends at Town Fair Tire, remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Dom is in Westport starting us off. What's up, Dom?
Hello, Dom.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
What's up, buddy?
Great show, as always. First of all, Sal, thanks for turning me on to the Denver Broncos. I've made some good money with them the last few weeks.
It didn't cover last night.
Didn't make it last night.
But I also did warn you about that last night.
You did.
Night.
You said don't touch.
Right read last night.
Yeah. And
game.
I said take the points. Yeah. You said don't touch. Well, I said take the points.
Yeah. No, you're right about that. But, you know, the last couple of weeks they did cover. But, you know, in terms of Dable's dead man walking, and I want to make a reference to Denver. How about Vance Joseph? You know, he was a head coach. He's been under a couple of good OCs, right? A good head coaches in terms of offense, Cliff Kingsbury and Sean Payton. And look what he's done with that defense. And the Giants definitely have enough horses on that defense to really maybe turn this thing around. And he wasn't terrible with Denver. I mean, he was 5-11, 6-10 without a great team, you know, no real great quarterback. So what do you think about that?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't. Vance Joseph doesn't get his. Does he get you excited at all? Not at all for me. Thank you, Dom.
But I understand why Dom would bring that up. I think a lot of Giant fans are in alignment here thinking, well, we got potential on this defense. We need to figure that out because we like the young quarterback and the offense has not been the problem. Even without Scadaboo, without Neighbors, the offense is not the primary issue. I'm not saying it's been great.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the problem. The problem is the defense can't do anything. And they were supposed to be the identity of this team coming in. So I understand the appeal of a guy like Vance Joseph. However, come on. This is New York here. It's the Giants. Enough with the maybe type guy. Yeah, there's potential there. Mm-hmm. Oh, this one side of the ball. Just go get a real, no doubt about it, head coach for a change.
You got to get a guy who's going to show up, and hopefully he can flash a little bling at that podium. You know, not in an arrogant way, but everybody knows that that man's got a Super Bowl ring on that finger. And to me, the more I think about this, that man looks like McCarthy. I don't know that they would ever do this. I would give serious consideration. I've staved off the Rex Ryan to the Jets, you know, before Aaron Glenn and before others. I just felt like that ship has sailed. I don't think he's a great head coach. If I'm the Giants, and I really want to be a little bit out of the box and get somebody that can galvanize the defense, get the fans pumped up, and also bring some championship DNA. How about a ticket of McCarthy as the head coach and Rex as the DC?
Yeah, I don't think Rex wants to come back as a DC.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, you don't know until you ask him. I mean, maybe he's getting tired sitting at that desk.
Yeah,
he's been at that desk for a long time.
I mean, maybe at some point he wants to get back in and knows that he doesn't have any power because he didn't want to come back in as anything other than a head coach.
No one's hiring him as a head coach is what I'm saying. So that might be his way back in.
I think we can come up with a bunch of different names that are intriguing. We also don't know how things are going to shake out the rest of the way. But if you fire Dable now and get a head start on things... to me, that is advantageous as opposed to waiting things through. Now, my bigger concern than that, because there will be other options, and I would bet it's more likely than not Dable is going to be out, especially if those reports are true that they were going to fire him. I don't think you go from we're going to fire him to...
Dude, he's a three-year extension.
Yeah, all of a sudden keeping him. My bigger concern is Joe Shane. I think Joe Shane is worse at his job than Brian Dable is at his. So to me, even if you fire Dable, and fans are going to be excited about that, or not excited, but just excited about the change, okay... Let's get a new head coach in here and maybe overlook the importance of Shane. And I think that's the bigger issue. So to me, it doesn't matter who the head coach is unless it's somebody that's going to come in and have more power than Joe Shane.
Yep.
But outside of that type of hire, it doesn't matter if you're keeping Joe Shane in the building.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing that we're getting very close to here, especially with this report, again, the depth of it, what's true, and I'm not here to refute anybody's report or work. I don't do that. But let's assume that it's true, and for the most part, I do. the one thing you can't have the rest of the way is like disarray. And that's why it's one of the first things I said to start the show. And I think we're getting perilously close to that. Now, Shane's not involved in the disarray because you don't hear from Shane on a day-to-day basis. He's in the weeds and, you know, we could deal with that at the end of the season. But if they come back from Chicago in a body bag and they just look lifeless and they get out-coached and they get punked, I mean, how do you keep this thing going? I mean, how do you not make them? And then you're looking at Green Bay, you're looking in at Detroit, up in New England. You can't just have it where it's a death march to the plank. That's why, even if it was Kafka, who I don't know if he would be a good head coach, maybe just a different energy or a different message. You got a lot of football to go. And you got 8 games to go, Sal.
And knowing that change is coming, I think, is the most, at least you're giving the fan base, hey, we know that this is unacceptable. We tried it. We were patient. Change is coming. Correct. Don't worry, Giant fans.
Speaking of the New York Giants, inactive yesterday at the trade deadline, who would have thought that the Giants couldn't find any takers for Evan Neal or Jalin Hyatt? I mean, I don't know. It is a shock, BT. Joe Shane tried to shop Evan Neal and Jalin Hyatt, according to reports. No takers. What a surprise. For me, this is a great thing that the Giants didn't do anything, and I hope it means that Joe Shane is on his way out. I would have had a freeze. I told you that.
Yeah, you did.
I'm not trying to be harsh here. I'm just trying to get this team to be a winning football team. They had 4 years. They had more than enough time. Joe Shane has proven that he has no idea what he's doing, how to build a team. Unfortunately for Brian Daboll, who I think has been the better of the two. If I had to pick Elimination Island, I would roll with Daboll more so than I would Joe Shane. But I think it's time that both of them need to go. So I'm glad that the Giants didn't make any moves that can jeopardize their future or enhance next year or impact next year in any way, shape, or form, when I fully expect that neither of these two, Shane or Daboll, will be around to see it.
You want to keep the cupboards full. So, you know, whomever you bring in, if you bring in somebody, and I am of the same mindset, I've established this a while ago, that I would replace both men, with all due respect. You don't want the job to, you know, look less appealing in terms of, well, you know, you threw some pretty important draft capital out the window here as guys were trying to save their behind. So whomever is going to be lined up to take the reins of this franchise and build around Jackson Dart, you want the full arsenal, and you go from there. And you know what's crazy? Just to throw the Jets and the Giants, although I would have liked to see a little receiver, I did say that, for Jackson Dart, but I obviously get it, especially if it was a mandate from Mara. So,
which we don't know. I'm hoping that that's the case, but either way, they didn't do anything.
Did nothing here. So the energy is completely flipped. A month ago, Jet fans were downtrodden. Giant fans were pumped up because the Giants were winning a little bit. And you had the Cam Scataboo dart rise. Here we go. And then it's flipped because now the reality of the doldrums of the Giants season is once again upon us here. Cam's hurt. They're not going to win a lot of games. Now the Jet fans feeling enthused because of the moves yesterday. And I ask you, for all the and I love what the Jets did yesterday. For all the things that the Jets did yesterday and everything that has, you know, defined the Giants so far this year, right now, which team would you rather be? Who's got the brighter future? To me, it's simple.
I think the clear direction is with the Jets right now. Now, that does not mean that they're going to have more success, because the one known commodity out of both teams is Jackson Dart.
Boom.
He's the known commodity.
So to me, my answer is the Giants.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean, what if they keep Joe Shane next year? Like, I'm still not sure they're going to do the right thing and fire both Shane and Daboll. And then I don't have any faith that they're going to hire the right people. Also, are they rebuilding? Is it a clean start rebuild? Or is it, okay, well, you have Jackson Dart, you have some players on defense, figure this out. Like, they're kind of in no man's land in some way, shape, or form. Now, they have the quarterback, so it depends on what you value. I just at least like, if I look at both organizations, I can see clearly the Jets have direction. They are rebuilding. They have been decisive. They are going to start to try to build this thing the right way in year one.
Mm-hmm.
So they have some runway here. The Giants are at the end of a tenure with Joe Shane and Brian Daboll, but they have the franchise quarterback.
Yes, and so they've already secured the one asset that has been incredibly evasive, not only for the Jets, but think about all the other teams around the NFL that take these massive swings. How's Cam Ward looking down in Tennessee? So, yeah, it's that's why I posed the question, because I think it's an interesting question, because I do philosophically, I love what the Jets are doing. I don't like, I love. I can't say, I love what they did yesterday. Whereas with the Giants, know, there's a lot of things I don't like, and we've hit this conversation a million ways sideways, but the one thing that you need, because without it, it's been proven over history, there's like 75% of the Super Bowl champions have had Hall of Fame quarterbacks. I'm not saying Dart's going to be a Hall of Fame quarterback, but you got to start somewhere, and at least there's real intrigue there, and he has great promise. So that's why it's not an easy question. I could actually see both sides.
I would probably say, me personally, I think it's more important. Now, I'm not going to choose the Jets in this regard because I'm not sure of what Muji and Glenn are yet. But I believe it's more important to have the right general manager and head coach combination building a culture and a structure and a foundation. I think that's more important than having a singular franchise quarterback or a quarterback with potential to be the franchise quarterback, because I've seen other scenarios where franchise quarterbacks have failed before.
Yeah, yeah.
Guys with potential. We've seen that in New York. So.
Yeah, that's true. To an extent, I mean, but the one thing that the franchise quarterback does is it lessens the pain of other mistakes, meaning because you could just elevate so many things around you that you could have an average GM, but if you have a great quarterback, you could have a team that's going to win 10 or 11 games, where if you have a C-minus quarterback and a great GM, and I'm not even talking about the Jets, I'm just saying in general, just a general thought around the NFL, you know, if you have a substandard quarterback and the general manager puts good players around him, but the quarterback can't deliver and elevate, it almost offsets the GM.
It could be a little bit of a chicken or the egg thing, but I look at the Broncos as an example. Look, see, to me...
Boy, you love these Broncos. Well, we got to get you a Broncos
jersey,
man.
It's one example.
He is all Denvered out, this guy.
It's one example, but to me, the good general manager-head coach combination will find a quarterback. You're not desperate to say, oh my God, thank God we have Jackson Dart. How would we ever survive?
Mm-hmm.
There are plenty of other football teams around the NFL, they're going to survive and have success without Jackson Dart. A lot more success than the Giants are going to have this year with Jackson Dart, because they're set up in a better spot. So whether it's Denver and Peyton going there and getting rid of Russell Wilson, identifying Bo Nix, who the Giants passed on and many others passed on, turning him into a playoff caliber quarterback, whether it's Andy Reid going to the Chiefs and turning Alex Smith into a solid winning quarterback before they selected Mahomes and set up the structure and foundation, like there are plenty of other examples to it. You know, the Vikings, whether, you know, Sam Darnold last year, the Seahawks setting up with Sam Darnold, like we've seen other teams, the Bucks with Baker Mayfield, that same quarterback, the great quarterback, failed in other spots, but yet the structure and foundation that he was put in Tampa has him succeeding more. So I understand the importance of a franchise quarterback, and I'm not trying to minimize Jackson Dart. I believe it's more important to have the proper structure with GM and head coach.
I hear what you're saying. All I'm saying, like, think about... Even just forget about the Jets and the picks and the names and the Giants and Dart. Like, I think it really does come down to how good you think Jackson Dart's going to be. And I happen to think that Jackson Dart has a chance to be great. That's my opinion on the player. What he could grow into if the Giants do right by him and he stays healthy, I think his ceiling is ridiculously high. So... while I can almost talk myself into, well, but the Jets have 9,000 options to get better. But if I'm just going to look and bet on one of the two franchises, right? And this is not to minimize my enthusiasm for the Jets.
Right.
I would place my money, because I think it's the smart money, on the team already with the quarterback rather than the team
Understood.
That has a million assets hoping to get one. That's all I'm saying.
Understood. But I think the Jets are in a better, more sound position overall.
I agree with that.
Outside of that. And think about it, another example I just thought of, the Chargers as well. They had the franchise quarterback with Herbert, but it really didn't mean anything until they got the head coach with Harbaugh. Like, the Giants could have a great opportunity here. Hard to find a franchise quarterback. Seems like they found one. Now they need to make the difficult decision of, do they move on from the guy who selected, or the guys who selected that franchise quarterback? Do they get the right guys in here? And then how the hell do they build around it? Because even with that franchise quarterback, they still haven't been able to win football games.
Here's the best part. They don't have to worry about the offensive line.
Yeah.
I mean, like, when they got Darnold and when they had Zach.
The Jets you're talking about.
I'm talking about the Jets. And obviously Eli at the end, you know, before Andrew Thomas, clearly. Like, at least that is one thing that you can bypass. Not that you don't want to find another guard or whatever, but you got the left side on lock. from last year with Olu. You got the right side on lock this year with Membude. You've got, I think you've got tight end one with Mason Taylor. I know you've got tight end one with Garrett Wilson. I do think that they extend Breece Hall based on the new financial climate. The money they saved, they can now do that. So I think you've got a running back in the future. So as you, whomever the quarterback is, you're going to bring him into a vastly different circumstance. And really, it's the circumstances of previous Jet teams that destroyed Darnold and, and Geno.
It wasn't the quarterbacks. Drake May, by the way, another example. Now, I know year two from rookie season is different, but there's no way if the Patriots kept Gerard Mayo, they'd be as good as they are right now without Vrabel, even with Drake May in year two.
Drake May's good. He's going to be a star. I agree. Mayo was a mess.
Well, I'm just saying.
And Vrabel's really good.
So it's important to have the proper structure around them. But it is a fascinating conversation. BT and Sal on the Fan, 888-808-1019. Jack is in Hazlet, New Jersey. What's up, Jack?
Hey, Sal. I would like to hear about how you think the Jets have more promise over the Giants, whether Jackson Dart is a franchise quarterback or not, when the best thing the Jets have to offer is just trading away their two seemingly best draft picks with Aaron Glenn jumping around like a buffoon on the sideline.
See, now, Jack, why are you so sensitive? First of all, I didn't say that they have more promise. What I said was I value, and I don't know if Muji or Glenn are going to be the guys. I value, A, the direction that the Jets have chose. B, the combination, not the Jets specifically, but just in general, the combination of a successful general manager and head coach more than I do just the individual franchise quarterback. But I don't know how you take that personally as if I attacked you and every Giant fan. Why are you so sensitive? And he hung up. I mean, just to answer the question, you got to offend Aaron Glenn. Like, I never said that the Jets had more promise. I'm just trying to decipher which one I value more. And I believe it's more important to have the proper structure with the general manager and head coach. And I'm not even saying the Jets have that.
Yeah.
They at least have a direction and they chose their guys. I would not have. I'm on the record saying I would not have gone with a first-time head coach here. But now that they're here, let them do what they need to do. Whereas with the Giants, the only thing you look to that organization with right now with any hope or belief is the quarterback. Now, that's a big deal, but it's the only thing that I would trust. The defense is god-awful. I don't trust the head coach. I can't stand the general manager. The structure of the organization has been a mess for years.
Like, stadium stinks. What else we got?
Is Jackson Dart going to be Superman and be the savior? I've seen that fail before with plenty of other quarterbacks as good, if not better, than Jackson Dart.
And now you look at the Jets' ability to rebuild this year with the two first-round picks this year, the two second-round picks, $120 million in cap space. You know, and the other thing, too, we talk about how Muji very smartly set up the contract of Sauce Gardner, where now the Colts, because it was only $12 or $13 million bonus, so that was very beneficial to the Jets. And again, I don't know if it was built with the intention of looking to proactively get rid of Gardner, or in the event that he wanted to be able to maybe trade him, this would be more appealing to the Jets to downstream not be as committed to the money that now the Colts will have to be on the hook for. The other thing he did, though, and you have to, I think, work this into the conversation on a much smaller level, Justin Fields is due $10 million next season. $10 million in the NFL for a quarterback is about the equivalent of a guy coming out of the bullpen who's your 10th pitcher on a 12-man twelve-man staff. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not consequential to the finances of the NFL. So,
which should also help you, whether you take a quarterback or not,
because you can keep Justin, correct. And he's a good teammate.
Whether to start the season
Before
you transition.
Correct.
Or just say, well, we're still not there yet. We don't love the quarterback or what it would take to get up to get the quarterback we love, and we like the draft next year better. We could stand pat for another year with Justin Fields as your starter. Like, it's not the worst thing in the world during a rebuild.
Correct. I think it's pretty clear that Muji came in with a very layered thought process. It wasn't just, let me get this quarterback and figure it out. No, let me get this guy because I think it makes sense for us now. And if it doesn't work out down the road, we could get rid of him. The finances will not be punitive. We will be able to pivot to this and to that and to this and to that. It's a very clear plan.
I think Muji's got it.
I'm feeling good about this guy.
Just early on, that we don't know, and there's a long way to go, but based on the circumstances he took over and the way that he's handled everything so far and the moves that they've made, I'm a fan. Like, he's done more to me than anything that we've seen with the Jets. Now, that's not saying much, but there's something about him with a calm, disciplined demeanor, with intelligence as well, that I... he could be the guy to turn this. Forget about the head coach. There's so much attention on Glenn. I think Muji's got it, BT.
Ooh,
I really do think
sing
so.
It. Let's go.
It takes balls to make the move that
he did. Yep.
Under the circumstances with the Jets to get rid of those players. So not only the sound, lesser explosive moves that he's made that
like the Brownlees and the other things I've talked about, finding a punter.
Even the Fields thing. And I can mock Fields all we want. Like, I don't think he could throw. I don't think he's very good. But I'm not expecting them to win games here. They're trying to build something here.
Yeah.
So the fact that he would make even the Sauce Gardner deal, knowing that he made that deal, just leaving the possibility open for, hey, if I need to move him, this is the type of deal that's going to benefit us if we can trade him.
Yeah, they could have been on the hook for $30 million guaranteed, and the Colts wouldn't have to absorb that much more money instead.
Right.
Now, again, if Gardner goes there and balls out, and watch, he's going to probably have a pick six the first game. You know something crazy is going to happen. But like, if he plays very well, then the Colts will happily absorb the money. But he did it with a mindset that was able to look at two different things. The now, if it works out, and tomorrow, if it doesn't. And that shows a depth and an aptitude we have not seen for many GMs for the Jets. That's for damn sure.
Or for the Giants in recent years. Not wasting any time either. Will is calling from Wilton, Connecticut. What's up, Will?
What up, Will?
Hey, boys. What's going on? What's going on?
Hey,
I'm super late for class, so I'll try to spit this out quickly. I was listening to Evan and Tiki yesterday, and Evan was upset about, you know, moving on from these guys and having to replace them. But in my opinion, they're replaceable. I mean, that's just the reality. You look at guys all around the league that are getting traded for, that want to get out, that want to go to new spots. In my opinion, the most important asset you can have is a quarterback on a rookie contract and having space and having money to do what you want. And I don't think Bo Nix is that good of a quarterback, but he came into a spot like where he has a great team around him. I mean, albeit he does have Sean Payton as head coach and a reliable organization, but if you can build like that, and like right now, I'm optimistic for the Jets. They can make some swings. And if you look at the upcoming draft for 2026 and 2027 with the quarterbacks, like there could potentially be four or five first rounders in there. So I'm just really excited for them. I think they made the right choice. Let's get out there, let's get a guy, and then let's get some pieces around him with the money they have.
That's the plan.
Thank you, Will.
And the plans, you know, I think that there will be some Jet fans over the offseason where they're like in March when free agency starts, they're going to want the Jets to spend $80 million in free agent money. No, but again, that's the old mindset. Just because you have it doesn't mean you flush it down the chute, because generally, Tiki always says this, and he's right, when you get somebody in free agency, you're really obviously overpaying, because part of what you're paying is for past performance, particularly in football. I'm not talking about somebody like a Juan Soto or a Kyle Tucker or somebody like that. But in football, you generally do that. It's generally bad business. So I think the ability now to save that money and devote the resources eventually to a quarterback, or try to entice a team right now that we're not thinking about. And I threw Burrow out there again, not to just do wacky, crazy, non-reality-based radio. But I say that because they are now able to sit down at every table and have a conversation about every massive power-broking player in the NFL.
Think about it this way, too. They could have gotten a quarterback year one. They could have traded for a quarterback or selected a quarterback with their first pick. Muji was disciplined, knowing, I would assume that part of his thought process is, maybe he didn't love some of the quarterbacks available, but part of the thought process is, I'm not bringing a quarterback in to this right now. Think of how much of a disaster that could have been. Whoever, whether it was Sanders, even Jackson Dart now, maybe that wouldn't have been as much of a disaster, but they could have had Jackson Dart. They chose to go in a different way, build this thing the right way, and let things play out. So if you were chasing the quarterback because you need the quarterback, first year head coach, let's bring him in, it would have been the same setup as the prior regimes that failed.
Yeah.
And now they're in a spot where they could have some success, to a point where I'm not even forcing the issue with the quarterback this year. Eventually, they're going to have to get one way or another, whether it's whoever, Burrow's available via trade, whether there's one in the draft, but they're not chasing it. They're letting the options play out, putting themselves in a position to pounce, kind of like what Leon Rose and the Knicks did when he first built this thing and started to build this the right way. Stockpiling those picks and cleaning up some of the money, the finances.
And get then some effort players around Randall.
Build the foundation with Tibbs in here and Randall taking a shot and developing certain guys. Okay, we're building it up. Now you get to a level in year two. We're going to need more talent. Let's go, obviously wait for Brunson to become a free agent. You land him. Like, that's how turnarounds happen. We just saw it with the Knicks, and maybe now you're seeing with the Jets. There are no guarantees. And I get the aspect of Evan, who was upset that you, look, when you're in a position as a franchise that you have to trade some of your best players, And the Jets have been down this road plenty of times before. Revis, Adams in recent memory, whatever. That position sucks.
Keyshawn back in the day, although that worked out.
It's a crappy position to be in. You should never have to be in a position. We see it with baseball all the time. Like, if you're the Tigers and now you're in a spot where you have to trade Schuble because you can't afford them. Like, that's a fail. The Red Sox with Betts, those are fails. So I understand that. However, you can't look back. And right now, the best that the Jets could do is, in fact, to move on from these guys. I know it sucks to be in this position, but to not be in this position again,
yeah,
you've got to rebuild it the right way. And at least showing decisiveness and direction immediately in year one, to me, are signs that it's the right path for the Jets.
I don't have an ounce of regret. And more importantly, because you know that sometimes I get too wrapped up in this, I don't have an ounce of sentimentality. See ya. I mean, see ya. No disrespect, Hugh. I mean, you really haven't done much the last couple of years in terms of getting to the quarterback. No disrespect, Gardner. I mean, you were good the first year and really good, and then you haven't done a damn thing since. That's it. So to me, what, like, you think about drafting, all right? Drafting. What is the key to drafting? Well, you got to identify the right player. That's obvious. But to me, it's even before that. To be a good drafter, and the great franchises do that, you've got to mitigate risk, meaning you've got to increase the odds of you doing the right thing. One of the ways you do that is by not being desperate. If you pigeonhole yourself into, we have to draft the quarterback this year, and even if we don't love him, we're going to force ourselves to like him because, damn it, we need a quarterback. Well, now you're not mitigating risk. You're doing the opposite. That's why, as you said, and as we know, boy, you can take a quarterback in 2027 right, when you have three first-round picks.
Also,
mitigating risk.
Think about what they kept. The Jets kept Breece Hall, right? Now, they would have traded him maybe for a three, but they still kept Breece Hall, and I have no idea what the extension is going to look like for him or whatever. But
about 11 or so.
They kept Breece Hall, a plus running back.
Yes.
They kept their star receiver in Garrett Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
The offensive line is something they've been consciously building.
It's good.
What does that lead to?
That leads to when the young quarterback gets here, there's now already an established wall around him. And it's like, okay, young man, you don't have to be great week one. You don't have to save us. Just be solid and we'll pull you through.
Bingo! Something they haven't had. A top receiver, not to mention the young tight end with potential.
Love him.
The offensive line and a running back. That to me seems like a pretty good recipe for success for whichever quarterback you do bring in whenever you bring him in.
Try to feel good as we can, for sure. After watching that snooze fest of a football game last night, I played in a couple games like that, so I don't want to get too critical. But I will say this, the thing that popped into my mind watching some of this game, especially in the second half, is that it is already evident to me that Jackson Dart's better than Bo Nix. He is. There's no two ways about it.
I mean, I can't argue that.
There's no two ways about it. Bo Nix is a fine player. I don't know if he'll ever reach where I think a lot of people thought he could go, and maybe he'll prove me wrong in what I'm saying right here. I don't think Jackson Dart will. I think Jackson Dart has got a ton more of poise and just throws the ball better and just has a better feel for the game. And I know there are games where we as quarterbacks end up grinding through games, you know, and that was one of the games last night for Bo Nix. He was just grinding through it. I mean, he threw balls behind people at their feet. He was leaving the pocket way too early. I mean, he was looking like a guy that, you know, was told before the game, look, as long as we don't turn it over, we can't lose, you know, that kind of thing. And he looked like he played. I don't want to say scared because nobody's they're not scared.
Tentative.
I would say, that's a better word. Tentative is the right word. And also watching their running backs last night, they weren't slamming it up in there. I mean, like, they were like, you know, I don't want to go there. I'm just going to go to the sideline. I mean, it was like a Thursday night game that we've used to seen in the past where the teams basically are worn out. It's towards, you know, it's the middle of the year right now. Denver Broncos have been through a lot. And now all of a sudden this game looked like it did last night. So, hey, they won. That's all they care about. They got 10 days off now where they don't have to play again until next Sunday. You got to be happy about that. So for them, in the simple way of looking things, we won the game. We're the first 8-win team, as you said. And we got to work on our offense because the offense looked terrible.
Yeah, and we saw that up close against the Jets as well and for three quarters against the Giants too. And this is why,
It was just yesterday I was talking about Bo Nix. What if Bo Nix were drafted by the Jets? You know, we might have had him out of town already by now. But he was drafted by the Broncos and Sean Payton, and he's getting the most out of him. It's you know, is it talent all the time or is it situation? Obviously, it's a combination of both, but I don't even know how I would feel if I were a Denver Broncos fan, because some of these games that they have played, think about the Jet game overseas in London and then this game. Think about those two games. They were as bad a football game you could possibly watch.
The first three quarters against the Giants.
Yeah, I mean,
the first half especially.
Well, right, but the Giants at least were playing well in that game.
Yeah.
Neither the Jets or the Broncos were terrible. And then last night, both these teams were terrible. It was, but they squeaked it out. They got it done. But this is not a team I would have any faith in going through the rest of the AFC and into the postseason, well, unless I see a major change in the offense.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, because their defense is good enough. The defense bailed them out again last night. But then again, they're playing against a bad offense anyway, and Geno Smith and the Raiders.
Think Pete Carroll's going to be a one-and-done, old, not working out, team stinks, Mark Davis.
I mean, how many coaches can they pay? How many coaches do they still have on their payroll?
I understand, but I
think it's Chip Kelly that goes. I think Pete Carroll stays and Chip Kelly goes, and the only reason I say that is because I don't know. I'm not really sure he knows what he's doing, and it reflects in, I think, in Geno Smith's play. You want a roadmap as a quarterback. You want a roadmap. You want a good game plan. You want somebody solid on the sideline calling the right plays, reminding you in your ear now that they can talk to you of the things that you know may happen, what you can go to. Now, I don't even know if they have that. I always wonder about the communication between sideline and quarterback and what's being said. Now, I know that Sean Payton, Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, Kevin O'Connell, those guys are in the ear of that quarterback. You know what I mean? And I think they help them along. It's a huge advantage for the quarterbacks of today as opposed to, you know, yesteryear when we played. But their situation in Denver. I mean, Sean Payton's got to be all over Bo Nix. Just like Bill Belichick would be all over Tom Brady. Like, you gotta hold this guy's feet to the fire. Like, I don't know what he was doing last night. I mean, leaving a pocket early, throwing the ball downfield late. I mean, all those things that it should be gone from him.
Yeah, we really didn't see a lot last year. I mean, he was way more mistake-free last year in his rookie season than he was this year. And I don't know what the difference would be. I know it's not, you know, we saw C.J. Stroud have a really good rookie season and not so much after that. I mean, sometimes you just can't figure it out. But there is no way they're beating the best teams in the AFC if they continue to play offense like that. Now, maybe they can get a couple home games, potentially, if they continue to squeak by. And then going to Denver is a very, very difficult place to play, especially when you're getting into the colder months and the altitude. And they got the place is loud, but I mean, I'd take the Chiefs over them. I'd take the Colts over them. I'd take, obviously, the Bills over them. Just on and on, almost every team in the AFC that's got a winning record. I would even take the Ravens right now over them if I had them. Patriots. So they're just weird. So at 8-2, they're weird.
You know what they are? They are a middling team, even though their record says they're not. And we always hear that same, you know, the record is what you are, some crap.
Well, there was
whatever.
An exchange. It's funny. That thing, which is Bill Parcells' thing.
Yeah.
You are what your record says you are.
Yeah.
So last night, there's this exchange with a reporter and Sean Payton where the guy starts saying this, right?
Yeah.
And Sean Payton just like jumps down his throat. So the guy's like, you know, Bill Parcells says that you are what your record says. And then Sean Payton doesn't even let him finish. And he's like, well, I mean,
Was he arguing like that? Okay, I'm trying to figure out where you're going with this.
No, he was mad at the fact that he knows what's going on, obviously. So that struck a chord with him, right?
Of course, yes.
So like he knew where the reporter was going, which is like, all right, you're 8-2, but like you're not playing well. You know, like that's where he was going. So like he didn't even let him like continue, and then he's just started defending the record and all this stuff, and then finally like calmed down. He's like, yeah, we got to get better offensively. But I think, you know, he knows exactly what that reporter was thinking, and he knows that reporter is right. That like, yeah, you're 8-2, but
yeah, exactly. You know? I know, and I'm sure Sean realizes that. But I will say that
two-thirds of their team is playing great. The defense played great. The special teams got a big turnover and block punt as they punt the ball into a head of a special teams player, which is, I mean, just that was part and parcel for the entire game last night. I mean, when was the last time you saw somebody block a punt with their helmet?
Yeah, I don't think I ever have.
All right. So it kind of felt like that it was choppy all over the place, and it wasn't great, not always going to have your best offensive games, but you're right. When they were over in London, when they came back and played the Giants, I mean, the end of that third quarter and the fourth quarter against the Giants has probably been their best offensive game or in-game offensive play that we've seen all year from them. But their defense and the ability to get to pressure on the quarterback and the tip balls and get interceptions, you know, it still remains there. So that part of the team is great. Like, they're the opposite of the Bengals.
Yeah, well, the Bengals could put up 40 points and they'll give up 45 every single time. Yeah, that's absolutely. I guess you'd rather have what you have in Denver now and hoping that Sean Payton figures it out with Bo Nix than what you have in Cincinnati, where your defense is a sieve and it just doesn't feel like anybody's going to be able to fix it.
Quarterback's the most important player, but defense wins championships, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
And you never know when that defense is going to be needed to win a game. And that's unfortunately what has not gone right for the New York Giants. You know, that's where the defense is supposed to win the game. It's for the Bengals, just win the game, just shut the game down, just end it, you know, and it's just not happening for those teams. So those are situations where the defense fails, but in a tight, tight game, whether it be in the 20s or 30s or, you know, down in the teens, you know, you still, somewhere along the line, the defense has got to make a play. They just got to make a play. I don't got to turn over a sack, something. Force a holding penalty, block a punt, whatever. That's defense. So you got to do something on defense. And that's one thing that Denver can fall back on, is that their defense is still one of the top defenses in football. And when they do play like an awful offense like the Raiders, you know, they're going to look good. I mean, so that part of it looked good. I think if I were a defensive player and in that game last night, because like when the Bears and the Bengals played and the Jets and the Bengals played, defense was optional in those games. And when the Giants played last week in San Francisco, defense optional. We don't want to tackle. We're not going to stick our head in there and make a play. But in this game, if you were a defensive player last night and there were 13 in a row, three and outs, you got to feel good about yourself.
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're riding high if you're one of those guys and making the tackles and the sacks and doing everything that you had to do and turnovers. And you mentioned the Giants and their defense and this week in Chicago, and I think the uniform matchup is going to be awesome. Both teams with throwbacks. And my favorite uniform in football is the all-white Giants throwback, which they're going to be wearing in this game. I think the Bears are also wearing, maybe wearing a throwback of this
no,
game,
I don't
too.
I understand. But I go to these throwback jerseys, and it seems like every fan loves it.
They're better.
So why don't they just make them their primary uniform?
Well, that's what I think. That's what I think the Jets certainly should do, 100%. The Eagles should go to that Kelly green. The Giants, to me, I love the old Giant uniform. I mean, I don't know if people like the Giants on the helmet over the NY.
I love the Giants.
Yeah,
on the helmet. By the way, they again, this is just semantics. I know they play in New Jersey. We all know that.
Yeah.
Right, that's why Giants makes more sense on the side of the helmet.
Sure.
Plus, they've had great memories in those helmets.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, they had great memories in the other helmets too. You know, they had a couple Super Bowls in both helmets.
It's the piping, it's the uniform coloring, it's the way that it's done, and people love it. People love nostalgia. Everything comes back.
Yeah,
I mean the Seahawks. The Seahawks.
Those jerseys, too, they're better.
Unbelievable.
The Bucks creamsicles. Maybe it's just us because that's what, you know, we loved football during that time. We love it now, but, like, that's when you're a kid and you're younger, and it's just different. You know, you look up to these guys as your heroes, and, you know.
I have to say that if you went back and you threw back the Bengal jerseys that I wore, everybody loves that uniform. That's great. Seeing the Bengals up close with their orange pants and their black tops and the orange helmet looked awesome, like in person. And then when they go all white with the white helmet, the white jersey, and the white, you know, the white pants, that looks great. So there's not really a lot of big push to go back to their older uniforms, even though they were great.
Yeah,
because the new uniforms, really, they pop on TV. They look great in person, but like the Giants. Actually, the Jets. The Jets, green and white with the green helmet on the road at the Bengals that day.
Yeah,
those uniforms were awesome.
Yeah, no, they do a nice
that helmet.
Job.
That helmet is unbelievable. What it looks like up close and personal, and you see like 53 of them running around out there on the field.
Sure.
Oh, it looks great.
Yeah. Well, you hadn't been like up close on the sideline to a game in at least about a year, right?
Yeah. I mean, we were there for Philly and the Giants, but that, it's a couple, not since like, the CBS crew when we would go to the AFC Championship game.
Right. Yeah. That was, there is something. Going to football games is not my favorite thing to do. Like watching them on TV is great, but if you're lucky enough to be up close with an NFL football team like that, you've never experienced that. It's unbelievable. Like seeing AJ Brown in person that day, I was like, this guy looks like a freaking middle linebacker.
You should have seen T. Higgins up close. I've seen him without a uniform, in a meeting room and stuff like that. But man, I couldn't believe how long his arms were and just how tall he was. And then, of course, you see Joe Flacco out there.
Yeah.
And, he could still spin it, man. That guy, just watching him throw pat and goes before the game on the sideline.
Yeah.
Man, everything's a tight spiral. Everything's coming right down into the player's hands. And he's living his best life because he's playing with that offense and those two wide receivers. And all he has to do is get the ball to them. And next thing you know, they're off and running.
You know what we're doing right now on this Feel Good Football Friday?
We're kind of going down memory lane.
Well, a little bit, yes, but we're glazing, guys.
We're glazing.
We're just glazing, guys.
You just glazed?
I just glazed A.J. Brown. You were glazing T. Higgins and Joe Flacco. Glazing Jackson Dart. We're glazing, guys.
I feel good about glazing, guys, because we're always ripping guys.
Yeah, you want to glaze somebody right now? Al, you want to glaze a football player right now?
Daniel Jones, he's your favorite, right?
Yeah, I do like Daniel Jones now. Baker Mayfield's back. The Bucks were off on a bye week. I'll glaze Baker Mayfield.
All right. Glazing Baker, Eddie, which is great, which is perfect.
Right, I know Eddie's a Dolphins fan. There's really not much glazing going on down here in Miami, but do you have anybody else that you want to glaze?
Glaze somebody?
No, not really.
You don't want to glaze anybody? No?
You just want to. He glazes us every day.
He doesn't really. He does the opposite of glaze us.
He glazes over us.
Yeah.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Once upon a dismal day, Bob's ice cream van looked gloomy and gray. Although he had big ambitions, his socials lacked creative vision.
That bad?
Maybe vamp it up a tad?
I have an idea.
Bob launched Canva and got into gear.
Create the video in the vampire theme and make it the funniest meme.
It went viral. Bob's business, a revival. Now, imagine what your dreams can become when you put imagination to work at canva.com.